Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Light of Truth Radio broadcast with Michael Boldea.
All right, welcome to the program and thank you for joining us. This is the Light of Truth Radio broadcast. I am your host, Michael Boldea. And although this is not a live broadcast, because every time we try to do a live broadcast, it just doesn't go very smoothly. So we've decided that whenever we are able, whenever it requires it, we will record the day of. And that way, there won't be any dead air. There won't be me going, Gino, you there? You there? So it all works out. Life is good. All right, welcome to the program. Today is August the 13th, 2020. This is a fresh program, so fresh, in fact, that I can confirm to you that Joe, where beest thou, Biden, has chosen Kamala Harris, or Kamala, I guess, because apparently you're supposed to say her name right, as his running mate. As his vice presidential pick. And now, you know what? I'm so just over politics. I'm so over polling. I'm so over all of these things that we get bombarded with every single day that I wasn't even going to mention it. However, I noticed something that is irksome to me. Yes, I use the word irksome. Because the same people that were frothing at the mouth going, why are you talking about politics and why do you keep mentioning Donald Trump? Same people are now posting big memes, Kamala and Joe, let's do it together. So I'm not going to do it today. If you message me and apologize, I won't do it next week either. But not only are you a hypocrite, you're a duplicitous hypocrite, and I will name you if you don't apologize, because you kept going on and on. Oh, we're supposed to be focused on heaven and on Jesus. How dare you talk about politics? Because, you know, those people make laws that you have to live by and your kids have to live by. So, yeah, that shouldn't concern you because you're only supposed to be focused on heaven. And now you're posting memes, Joe and Kamala, let's do this together. Let's go for the win. You make my stomach turn. I despise hypocrisy. I despise duplicitous hypocrites. So, again, this is the only olive branch that you will get from me. You know who you are. Either message me and apologize, or I will name you publicly so that people will see how duplicitous a creature you are pretending to be of the household of faith. Because you know what? If we're going to go, you know, both barrels, then let's go both barrels. If you vote for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris in this next election, there is no Christianity in you. I'm sorry. That's the way it is. Anyone that can support post-birth abortion and do it with a smirk on her face, because Joe doesn't know. Joe doesn't know where he is half the time. He wakes up and reads his hand. Delaware. I'm in Delaware. So we're talking about the individual who will likely be president within the first 6 months of the next election cycle if, God forbid, they happen to win. Kamala Harris is all in on post-birth abortion. If you're not a single-issue voter, better become one, because this is the most egregious of the issues that she's for. At least to me, at least to my morality, at least to biblical morality. Because John Kasich, Christian man, you know, yay, John! How can anyone vote for Donald Trump? It is unchristian. Do you see what they've been trying to do for the past 6 months, and it's only going to escalate? They're going to find these people that they can buy. Because that's what happened to John Kasich. He's just bitter and butthurt that a guy like Donald Trump made him look the fool. So they're going to find these people, offer them buckets of money to try to spiritualize this entire thing and go, well, I, as a Christian, Mitt Romney, same thing, even though he's Mormon, so technically he doesn't count. Same reason, butthurt. But between a guy who was a playboy and a billionaire in his early youth, who flies off the handle once in a while and tweets some spicy things, and Kamala Harris, who's for post-birth abortion, tax-funded, meaning you pay for it. We can't ask a single mother to carry the burden of paying for murdering her own child. That would be uncouth. So we shall demand it of the taxpayer. The taxpayer shall pay for the single mother to murder her child. So, yes, I'm throwing down the gauntlet. This is ridiculous. Because the next time you try to browbeat me into not talking about politics, I will remind you of your hypocrisy over and over again. Like I said, you got a week, 7 days. I am me, apologize, I won't mention your name. If you don't, you know I got nothing to lose, kid. I don't get paid for doing this program. I don't make any money. I don't have any back end. I don't have Patreon. I don't have Vimeo. I don't have any of the things that supposed sacrificial leaders in the Christian community keep pumping every day. I've mentioned it before. I'll mention it again because it's one of the wisest things I did since beginning ministry. I build tents. I make a living doing work with these two chubby hands. So no one can buy me. No one can threaten me. And no one can tell me what I shouldn't talk about. Because I'm not beholden to men. I do this out of love for the household of faith, and out of duty to God. That's it. But I know you got Patreon. You know I'm talking to you because I know you listen to the program. I know you got Patreon. I know you got Venmo. I know you keep pumping people to, you know, give a little so the work can go on, wink, wink. Again, if you weren't such a detestable hypocrite, I wouldn't have an issue. But it's the hypocrisy, man. People can disagree with me. I have no problem with disagreements. But when you're a duplicitous hypocrite, chiding me and browbeating me about talking about politics, and the first thing you do 3 minutes after Nutty Joe announces Kamala Harris is post a big thing on your Facebook page. Joe and Kamala, let's do it together. Unless you are mentally challenged to the point that you're receiving government aid for being unable to hold down a 9-to-5 at the pick and save. Then you already understand that a Joe Biden, Kamala Harris administration will persecute Christians unlike any administration in the history of this country. It will be open warfare on the children of God. That's just an added bonus to post-birth abortion, taxpayer-funded, of course. But yeah, Joe and Kamala, let's do it together. Are you that blind? Look, just if you read without knowing who did these things, how much Christianity has been defended, how much the church has been defended by this administration, you take your hat off and go, hey, that's pretty solid. Given that the last administration was basically threatening to shut down churches for saying homosexuality is a sin, we got a little breathing room for 4 years to preach the gospel. We didn't do it. But we got to blame somebody, don't we? See, we squandered the time we were given. And I don't see, I'm curious about this. It's a psychological curiosity to me. Why is it? I'm pulling at a thread here in my mind. And it's a scary thread to pull at. Is it because you don't want to answer for another 4 years of squandered time? That you're willing to let an old man with dementia and a almost hooker who slept her way to the top and has no qualms about killing babies after they're born run the country? Is that it? I don't, because I know it's not Munchausen by proxy, but is it perhaps Stockholm Syndrome? Why would you be willing to let the country you live in be turned into a socialist toilet when you could do something to keep it from becoming a socialist toilet? Is the guilt too much? You look back on 3 years where the church has been relatively safe up until they started burning Bibles in the street in Portland and, you know, breaking windows in churches and beating up pastors as they were walking into the church. But that's just a precursor, kiddie. If you think it's bad now, imagine those people off the leash being encouraged by those in power to make you fall in line. Hypocrite. Kamala and Joe, let's win this together. Oh, I'm still fuming. And I was having a good morning, too. Woke up, birds were chirping, everything was good, and then I made the mistake of going to Facebook. And there it was. Look, if you don't have enough spiritual discernment, I'm not even going to go to the discernment, am I? You're just a hypocrite. You're just a wolf in sheep's clothing. You're trying to twist the hearts and minds of God's children to vote for baby murderers and think it's a good thing and a good idea. You know what's wrong with the church today, man? You speak out both sides of your mouth. But yeah, I could go on for the next 45 minutes because I'm that angry, and I shouldn't do radio programs when I'm angry because it's not like I'll say anything I'll regret. No, I regret none of it. You're never going to hear an apology from me for the things I say, because I weigh my words and I believe in the things I say. And thus far, 36 years in, because that's how long I've been in ministry, I haven't had to backtrack like some of you have. Yes, I know you listen to the program. I haven't had to apologize. I haven't had to mea culpa. Nobody's been pointing fingers at me going, hey, your wife left you and now you're living in adultery. No. And it's not going to start now. I'm a realist, and you know this about me.
Well, if it was a perfect world, then someone with the likeness of Jesus would run for president and he would win.
Well, again, it's not a perfect world. Best we can do is pray for repentance still. I'm still hoping. And do our part in making sure that somebody who will actively attempt to imprison us and kill us for being Christians never gets power. Because socialists and communists see you as a believer as competition. There cannot be two sources of hope in one nation. Because if you offer people two sources of hope, they will gravitate towards God. They will gravitate towards religion. They will gravitate towards spirituality. And so you have to extinguish that along with every proponent thereof. Because everyone must bow and grovel and scrape at the feet of government. They must make themselves lowly and become silent and reach out with a shaky hand, hoping they get a brick of cheese or some hot dogs in a can. And if you misbehave, if for some reason, by some miracle, you're not there groveling, well, that's just unacceptable. Because it'll give the other peons ideas. It'll make the other peons non-compliant. And we can't have now that, can we? All right, I'm going to breathe. Still angry. I'm not sinning, but I'm still angry. You're allowed to be angry. I cannot stand Christians who see what is happening in this country, who see what is happening to the nation that they love, and just sit there like blobs, inert, with no emotion on their face.
Well, you know, brother, bound to happen.
Be angry. Don't sin. But be angry. The Bible lets you. It allows you. It gives you permission to be angry. The Bible gives you permission to defend your children. The Bible gives you permission to do everything you can to make sure that you are a provider for your family. And not just foodstuffs, not just a roof, but a future.
Joe and Kamala, let's do it together.
Shame on you. Reactionary babies. Coddled infants who think yourself spiritually superior to everyone else. Shame on you, hypocrite. All right, I gotta stop. I can't. I gotta stop. I'm reaching a threshold, as it were. So, no more news for today. We're just gonna get into 1 Samuel 17 again. Take a deep breath, cleansing or otherwise, because you know nowadays, if you breathe too deep, you might get corona. Even though, you know, it's just, this is the world we live in now. This is what men have deemed the new normal. And when yours truly was saying back in, oh, I don't know, March, that if you make it too easy for them to control you, if you make it too easy for them to dictate terms to you, they're not going to give up the reins of power after 2 weeks. Because once in a while, I like reminding you that the whole mask thing, the whole stay in your house thing, the whole let's shut everything down thing was supposed to last for 2 weeks. Remember, 2 weeks to flatten the curve. And then all is well. Welcome to August. August the 13th, to be precise. But I digress. I needed a bridge. I needed to sort of talk about something for a minute that wasn't, you know, duplicitous hypocrites before I got back into 1 Samuel 17. We left off with a young shepherd boy being summoned by his father to go and bring food to his three oldest brothers who had gone to follow Saul to battle. Now, one thing that we overlook when reading this chapter, because it's an amazing chapter. Once you get to, you know, slingshots and giants falling and heads being cut off, it's hard to get into the nuance of it, isn't it? But this is a far deeper chapter than many give it credit for. And one of the things that we need to understand when we see this portrait of a young shepherd boy going out to bring food to his brothers is that David didn't go looking for a battle, but he didn't shy away from it either. For those of you taking notes, just write that down and circle it, because it should serve as a guidepost for your spiritual life. David didn't go looking for a fight, but he didn't shy away from it either. David went to deliver food to his three oldest brothers who'd gone off to battle. He was just going about fulfilling his father's wishes, because it was his father Jesse that said to his son, take for your brothers an ephah of this dried grain and these 10 loaves and run to your brothers at the camp. And he also sent 10 cheeses to the captain of their 1,000. And then he asked for news of how his brothers were. And once he discovered how his brothers were, he was supposed to bring the news back to his father. David did not go looking for a fight, but he didn't run away from it either. There are a lot of believers today that are constantly looking for a fight. They have no other tasks, they have no other duties, they have no other purpose other than to pick a fight, other than to fight with somebody. They see devils behind every bush. They accuse people of making satanic signs when all they were doing was, you know, just making a little booger ball between their thumb and index finger. And those are people that will never understand how priceless obedience can be. Those are people that are constantly frothing at the mouth, looking for something to be incensed about, looking for something to be angry about, looking for somebody to fight with, because they think taking some grain and some cheese to their brothers is beneath them. Send someone else to do the women's work. Send someone else to do the grunt labor. I want to fight. And so every other day or so, there's something that they see because they've been looking for it for so long. And of course, they feel as though it's their duty to warn everyone else and get everyone all excited and shaken up. And it becomes this constant cycle of just adrenaline rush after adrenaline rush, because they found the newest enemy, they found the newest thing. Whether it's the way somebody holds their finger, or the way somebody's cut their hair, or the fact that they're wearing a blue tie, or a red tie, or a striped tie, they're always seeing something nefarious. And in constantly looking for something nefarious, they miss out on a close enough relationship with the Father for the Father to speak to them and send them to do his bidding. I hope this makes sense, because it makes sense in my head, and sometimes what comes out of my mouth and what makes sense in my head are two different things. But see, the first prerequisite for Jesse to send David was that David was his son, and those to whom he sent David were his brothers. David didn't go looking for a fight. He didn't go to his dad and said, "Dad, let me at him. Let me go. I feel as though I will be a champion." No, David didn't do any of that. David was tending the sheep. And he was content in tending the sheep until his father called him and gave him a task. His father gave him a task which to many would seem menial. Take some dried grain and some loaves and some cheese, and once you deliver it to your brothers and the captains of their thousand, come back and bring news of them to me. That was it. That was the extent of what David was summoned by his father for. It wasn't to go be a great champion. It wasn't to go strike fear in the hearts of the Philistines. It wasn't to go looking for a fight. It was to take food to his brothers. There are many believers today that are constantly on the battlefield, constantly trying to find an enemy, and it's been a long time since they've had a heart-to-heart with the Father. It's been a long time since the Father's had news of them. Just a thought. Better to be faithful in the little things than wander off on your own seeking the great things. So let's commence with the reading, shall we? beginning with verse 16 of 1 Samuel 17. And the Philistine drew near and presented himself 40 days, morning and evening. And we talked about this last program, where this was one of the first documented cases of psychological warfare. In order to keep someone afraid, they need to be reminded that they should be afraid. Every day, all day, constantly, without fail. Remind you of anything going on presently? Then Jesse said to his son David, take now for your brothers an ephah of this dried grain and these 10 loaves and run to your brothers at the camp. And carry these 10 cheeses to the captain of their thousand and see how your brothers fare and bring back news of them. Now Saul and they and all the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah fighting with the Philistines. Or at least this is what Jesse presumed. So David rose early in the morning, left the sheep with the keeper, and took the things and went as Jesse had commanded. And he came to the camp as the army was going out to the fight and shouting for the battle. Again, 'tis also what many Christians do today. They shout for the battle up until the point Goliath shows up. For Israel and the Philistines had drawn up in battle array against army against army. And David left his supplies in the hand of the supply keeper, ran to the army, and came and greeted his brothers. Then as he talked with them, there was the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, coming up from the armies of the Philistines. And he spoke according to the same words. So David heard them. When the enemy is shouting threats, don't pretend as though you don't hear. When the enemy is cursing the God you serve, don't pretend as though you don't hear. The Philistine spoke according to the same words, and David heard them. And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were dreadfully afraid. Were these the same folk that were out to the fight and shouting for the battle? Yeah. The same people that were hyping themselves up, the same people that were going, oh, we're going to get him, we're going to get him. The same people going out to the fight and shouting for the battle. Fled and were dreadfully afraid when they finally saw the enemy. Think about that. By all accounts, these were seasoned soldiers. By all accounts, these were men that belonged to the army of Israel. And when they saw the enemy face to face, they fled and were dreadfully afraid. How many people beat their chest and declare themselves champions only to tuck tail and run when the enemy takes the field. That, dear friends, is a good question, isn't it? So the men of Israel said, "Have you seen this man who has come up? Surely he has come up to defy Israel." No kidding. And we can make a correlation here. We see the declared agenda of silencing churches, of killing babies, emptying prisons, of allowing for hooligans to run wild. And there's still believers wondering, are they defying the household of faith, perhaps? You think? The church needs to wake up to what's going on. Because right now, kids, you're more concerned about bedside manner than you are whether or not the doctor can cure you. Well, I know he's good at what he does, and everybody's saying that he could probably find out what's wrong, but you know what? I don't like his bedside manner. So I'm going to go to, you know, the guy with the false teeth and who's not quite right in the head. But he's really nice. He's really nice. No, he pretends to be really nice. There's pretense there. Just as Kumala pretends to be nice. See, at least with the big orange man, what you see is what you get. He doesn't have to pretend. He doesn't have to coddle. He doesn't have to pander. And I know I'm rare, but I kind of find that refreshing. Where someone doesn't have to pander, where they can just tell the truth. And sometimes the truth is brutal beyond your imagining. You don't want to be in an exam room where a doctor tells a family that their 7-year-old has leukemia. Or that their 12-year-old has a brain tumor. That is brutal. But it's the truth. And sometimes we have to deal with brutal truths and not close our eyes and pretend as though we're not hearing what we're hearing. Or come up with excuses. Oh, but the way he says it, Mama, the way he says it. I don't know, man. If your feelings matter to you that much, where you're willing to subjugate your children to communism, then by all means feel your feelings. I'm done. It's just it's astounding to me. But let's keep going on with this. I just saw the parallel, though. And the parallel is evident. The men of Israel said, "Have you seen this man who has come up? Surely come to defy Israel." You see, when some on the other side talk about re-education camps and about being merciful enough to try to make you see the light, to try to make you turn from your wandering way and embrace the glories of Marxism. You have no choice but to believe them at their word. But see, a lot of people shrug it off. Oh, it's just hyperbole. It's just exaggeration. No, it's not. It's what they would do if they had the power to do it. This is their wet dream. This is their fantasy. This is what they would carry out if they had the power to do so. You would be taken to a re-education camp and either be made to see the error of your ways or kept there indefinitely. You thought the Chinese were bad? You have no clue. Your baby's getting angry because an adult's trying to wipe your face. Unreal. And it shall be that the man who kills him, the king will enrich with great riches and will give him his daughter and give his father's house exemption from taxes in Israel. Even then, not paying taxes was tempting enough to try to get men to go and, you know, on a suicide mission. But just listen to all that would be bestowed upon the man that would dare go and face Goliath and kill him. And if this had been going on for 40 days, it's highly doubtful that this was the first time offer was made. And oddly enough, no one had taken the king up on his offer for 40 whole days. Tempting, because most of these people that were in Saul's army were just farmers' kids. There was nothing noble. It's not as though that they would be somebody someday. And for going out and see, and this is the clean, because you have to look at the contract. And you have to read the small print. You had to kill Goliath in order to get this stuff. You didn't just have to be brave enough to walk out there and have Goliath throw his spear through you. Hope that you survived it somehow. The man who kills him, the king will enrich with great riches. Give him his daughter and give his father's house exemption from taxes in Israel. But see, of all the brave souls who had gone out to the fight and shouting for battle, not one stepped forward. Not one said, you know what? I can take him. Look at this. He has come up to defy Israel. He is mocking our God. Not one. And here was David, a young shepherd boy, who'd just come to deliver some food for his brothers. And he looked around and he couldn't process what he was seeing. Here were all these men who just moments earlier had been shouting for the battle, now fearful and utterly silent. Then David spoke to the men who stood by him, saying, "What shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" And here we see the marked difference between David's perception and the perception of every other man standing on that battlefield. David didn't see a giant. David didn't see a Goliath. David didn't see an insurmountable foe. He saw someone who was defying the armies of the living God. He saw an uncircumcised Philistine. In David's thought process, there was never a doubt that Goliath would be felled. In David's thought process, there was never a doubt that Goliath would be vanquished, because he was defying the armies of the living God. And it would be God who would vanquish Goliath. And the people answered him in this manner, saying, "So shall it be done for the man who kills him." Now, Eliab, his oldest brother, heard when he spoke to the men. Eliab's anger was aroused against David, and he said, "Why did you come down here? And with whom have you left those sheep in the wilderness? I know your pride and the insolence of your heart, for you have come down to see the battle." And now we get a glimpse into Eliab's heart. A man so ashamed of his own impotence that he had to lash out at his little brother. Can you imagine that? Here you are, David, a young man, summoned by your father to go deliver food to your brothers. And your older brother accuses you of having a prideful and insolent heart. Not because you demonstrated it, but because he's ashamed of his own impotence. Why did you come down here? And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your pride and the insolence of your heart, for you have come down to see the battle. Everything that Eliab said was presupposition. He had no facts. That's what's happening a lot in Christianity nowadays as well. People are presupposing the intent of the heart of their brethren without having anything to back it up with. No factual basis to their declarations.
Oh, I know. Believe me, I know. What do you know?
What do you know? I know it's a secret. What you know is a secret, but I'm supposed to trust you that you know it, even though you're not willing to share it. You know. So I'm just supposed to follow. Don't question. Never question. You ruin the ruse if you question. And yet the Word of God tells us to be Bereans and question pretty much everything. Make sure that it's harmonious with the Word of God. And so even though it's an easy thing to slap a big old thing on your Facebook page, Joe and Kamala, let's do this together. Once you discover what they stand for, kind of hard to stand with them, isn't it? And David said, what have I done now? Is there not a cause? And this is where we're going to stop for today, and this is my question to you. Is there not a cause? Looking at everything you're seeing, looking at all the enemies that have aligned themselves, doing their utmost, willing to destroy their own livelihoods. Being ruthless to the point of having no qualms about destroying innocent men, of besmirching their good name. Of obliterating their families and everything they worked for. I know, it's history is such a, you know, weird thing. But go back in your way back machine and remember. Because I do. It was one of the most cringeworthy moments of the last decade. The Kavanaugh hearings. And the potential future vice president / president of these United States, Kamala Harris, smirking from year to year as she was getting ready to attempt and destroy the life of a decent human being. I remember that because the hair on the back of my neck stood up when I saw that smile. They did the same thing to General Michael Flynn. But yes, I know. Joe and Kamala, let's do it together. Never mind that they both think killing babies is A-okay. That they would see churches shuttered for offending homosexuals. Never mind all that. She's a historic figure. The first black female vice president. I'm sorry, she's not black. She's Indian. And her dad's Jamaican. But if you tell a lie long enough, eventually some people will believe the lie. But I will leave you with this. is there not a cause? Is there not a cause you're willing to fight for? Is there not a cause you're willing to stand up for? Because if you can't find a cause now, then it's just because you don't want to. And with that, I will leave you for today. Remember, apologize, or I'm calling you out, hypocrite. God bless you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for allowing me my forays into my angry place. And with that, Gino, if you've got anything to say, it's all yours, bud.